look, everything in Washington has been a lie. Weapons of mass destruction.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Release the Kraken!
3, 2, 1.
COVID-19 crisis has shown us that our old systems are not fit anymore for the 21st century. It has laid bare the fundamental lack of social cohesion, fairness, inclusion, and equality. In short, we need a great reset.
If they asked us all 20 years ago to start reducing the population, and by starting with ourselves, well, no one would step forward and volunteer. So they do it. And that was the whole point of creating the Royal Institute for International Affairs, a parallel government, because they said that democracy and the bickering with politicians and, to say, the irreconcilable factors amongst groups within society were just too different, too much at odds, and they were at loggerheads with each other. They could not get their big agenda through. Therefore, the parallel government would not be responsible to the public, and it could steamroll ahead and bring in their new world order.
Hydra has been secretly feeding crisis, reaping war. And when history did not cooperate, history was changed.
That's impossible. Shield would have stopped you.
Accidents will happen.
Hydra created a world so chaotic that humanity is finally ready to sacrifice its freedom to gain its security. Once the purification process is complete, Hydra's new world order will arrive.
We are controlling transmission. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can change the focus to a soft blur. Or sharpening.
We are the Borg. Lower your shield and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
And agenda control is exactly what people think.
And this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous.
That life here began out there, far across the universe, with tribes of humans who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians, or the Toltecs, or the Mayans.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, don't you get it? Police is the ones in on it.
For our policemen, we created a race of robots. Their function is to patrol the planets in spaceships like this one and preserve the peace. In matters of aggression, we have given them absolute power over us. This power cannot be revoked. At the first sign of violence, they act automatically against the aggressor. The penalty for provoking their action is too terrible to risk. The result is we live in peace, without arms or armies, secure in the knowledge that we are free from aggression and war, free to pursue more profitable enterprises.
First, our efforts to understand and share information regarding the full range of domestic terrorism threats. Second, our efforts to prevent domestic terrorists from successfully recruiting, inciting, and mobilizing Americans to violence. Third, our efforts to deter and disrupt domestic terrorist activity before it yields violence. And finally, the long-term issues that contribute to domestic terrorism in our country must be addressed to ensure that this threat diminishes over generations to come.
We are in the process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. People can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not
to. Our masters!
What do these things want, and why are they here?
You still don't get it, do you, boy?
They have recruited the rich and the powerful!
They're running the whole show.
Wake up! They're all about you, all around you. Blinded us to the truth!
Take a look.
They are safe. As long as they are not discovered.
I don't know what they are or where they came from, but we gotta stop them.
Stay away from me.
Put these on.
They have us.
Look at them. They're everywhere. Our owners.
We have no other choice.
I don't like this one bit.
Leave it alone, man. It ain't none of my business. Ain't none of yours.
We have been lulled into a trance.
Listen to what I say to you. We're in trouble. The whole world's in trouble. Control us! You're sending some kind of signals on a TV set.
I've got one that can...
To the labyrinthine world of doublethink. To know and not to know. To be conscious of complete truthfulness while telling carefully constructed lies. To hold simultaneously two opinions, which cancelled out, knowing them to be contradictory and believing in both of them. To use logic against logic. To repudiate morality while laying claim to it. To believe that democracy was impossible and that the party was the guardian of democracy. To forget whatever it was necessary to forget, then to draw it back into memory again at the moment when it was needed, and then promptly to forget it again. And above all, to apply the same process to the process itself. That was the ultimate subtlety. Consciously to induce unconsciousness, and then once again to become unconscious of the act of hypnosis you had just performed. Even to understand the word doublethink involved the use of doublethink.
You know, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real-world data.
Reports from our international colleagues, including Israel, suggest increased risk of severe disease amongst those vaccinated early. Given this body of evidence, we are concerned that the current strong protection against severe infection, hospitalization, and death could decrease in the months ahead, especially among those who are at higher risk or who were vaccinated earlier during the season.
The issue that really grabbed me as urgent were issues related to population.
Issues related to population.
In 1998, Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
Dr. Zabin became the founding director of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute for Population Control.
We see a lot of things that are going very well, things like reducing childhood death and... First, we've got population. Now, the world today has 6.8 billion people. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
He cited banks, the chief among which were Morgan Guarantee Trust and Chase Manhattan, and the foundations connected with these monoliths. It was not long after this that Stokely Carmichael mysteriously was ousted from both SNCC and the Black Panthers. Apparently, he had learned too much. More and more, young radicals are beginning to wake up to the fact that their entire lives have been carefully programmed by the very people who are their hate symbols. They're beginning to realize that their so-called anti-establishment outlook actually is the calculated product of the establishment press, the establishment communications media, the establishment entertainment industry, the establishment schools. Rich men's corporations publish and popularize revolutionary books and songs. Through advertising, rich men's businesses subsidize revolutionary magazines. Rich men's tax-exempt foundations pour millions of dollars into left-wing organizations. The federal establishment in Washington, through agencies like the OEO, provide weekly paychecks to thousands of hardcore revolutionaries. And so we return again to the basic question, why? Why does the establishment publicly condemn but privately support the anti-establishment movement? Former communist Jerry Kirk answers, the idea is to create a situation where the people are so frightened of the violence all around them that they will throw their hands up in the air and demand federal government do something. And the only choice open will be martial law. The communists, black militants, and revolutionaries will never succeed in overthrowing the government of the United States. But unless they are stopped, they will scare the American people into accepting socialism from Washington and statist rule by the insiders of the establishment. This is what it is really all about.
Gets up and tears the shit out of everybody, runs like the wind, eats everything in his path. Because every once in a while, the lion has to show the jackals. Who he is.
I am your voice. Join me in taking back our country and creating a bright, glorious, and prosperous new future for our people. We will make America great again.
I am the storm.
I like Rex a lot.
He's here. Rex is here.
He's here. Do you want him to stay in his job?
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
You are live on Liberty's Thunder. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive truth with a bite. I know it's been a while since we've done a show, and many of you have been bugging me to do one. Haven't really felt like it because there's not anything worth talking about that is the current conversation. I mean, you know, I post on my Facebook page. Well, wait, no, I don't because I got suspended again for saying something about Rittenhouse that turned out to be true after the verdict, but I'm still banned for another 3 weeks. So you better get on Gab. But there's a lot to talk about that's important. Problem is, I'm not sure that most can hear it. Butch Robinson on his Bond Robin channel on Rumble, BitChute, Gab TV has been pointing these things out and doing a great job. Make sure you follow him and support his channels and share the information, because if you don't, no one will. But it's bleak out there. You remember when I told you that if we let them steal the 2020 election, this is before we went and voted in the hopes of beating the cheat that we knew was coming, just like we did in 2016. Remember when I told you on these internet waves that if you let them steal the 2020 election, we will all be punished for having dared to elect Trump in 2016? Yeah, well, it's happening. And it's getting worse. And it's getting worse quickly. Now, in many ways, it was never good. But a lot of people can't grasp that. It's a hard truth. The Republic fell, past tense, before you were born.
Oh, Rex, you don't know how old I am, so you can't really say that as a fact.
Yes, I can. The oldest woman in the world, I believe, just recently passed away at 124 years of age, and the Republic fell before she was born. So it fell before we were all born. the empire in which we find ourselves is in decay. It's not dead, but it's in severe managed decay. And we live among the ruins. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, that is a bad thing, but it's not necessarily a bad situation in the sense that it's really an opportunity. If you have clarity of mind, unfortunately, I think most still don't, although more than ever do. But it's a struggle. It's a very difficult, protracted struggle. All there is struggle. Nothing but struggle. Sometimes, tranquility lulls us into the deceit of serenity among the discord. The Marxist-Leninists offer conflict theory in action, which is a gross distortion of the real struggle. Yet it is more real than the false sense of concord offered by the normies, by the conservative ideology of the supposedly sane and always milquetoast on the so-called right. Concord is offered as the baseline, and discord is presented as the abnormality in constant combat that never returns to concord and never yields to discord, but merely transmogrifies into a new degenerate aberration, a monster born from the imagination of man, set free from truth and enslaved in the bowels of a self-constructed hell induced by the evil one. In this self-constructed hell, some fear the change and long for the future of a romanticized past that never existed. The past never exists. It is gone. Some yearn for the dark past, resplendent in the future of all possible worlds, except the one that truly is. Almost there. It's within our grasp. Just beyond the horizon. Almost in our hands. If only we can shed the limitations of self and merge into the transcendence of the metamind, of the singular future that never existed. The future never exists. It is always unrealized. Then others, perhaps most, live in the moment, the only time that is. But instead of living in this moment of truth, they choose the banal lie of electric nerves, ever yielding pain and pleasure. Forget remembering, remember forgetting, feel it good, and lament the never-ending boredom as you long for the sweet release of absolutely nothing that never existed. It is non-existence, ineffable denial, orgasmic oblivion and anodyne annihilation, the love of nothing, which is no love at all. It is sheer hatred. It is evil in essence, and it is a lie. Peace of chaos never arrives. The order of tranquility is a phantom. death is desired and not achieved. So it is dealt out over and over and over again in a revelry of decay, a perpetual sacrifice of nothing for nothing, in the insanity of blindness, the irrational deafness, willed as a longing for a taste of death, a touch of something other than the vile, hated person we find within, because the noesis of truth has been banished. For nothing. For nothing. For no thing. The ultimate meta-struggle session of eternal reality. It is a struggle session on a meta-scale of eternal reality. This is the bleak picture that most of us live in and don't acknowledge it. We don't live deliberately. We don't examine our lives. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and He is God, and you are His, and only you can deny Him yourself. Struggle is real. Oh, the struggle is all too real. The struggle is simple. You have nothing but the struggle. Now, the struggle is not easy, and that's why most of us avoid it, because it is hard. But struggle you must, because the reward for victory is unspeakable, unknowable, ineffable, and absolutely true and good and beautiful. The struggle of yourself against the unknowledge of God, of truth, of life, and the struggle is the only way. Christ came to set the captives free, and the captives have to struggle to the death to desire to become free. Oh, the struggle is all too real, and most of us, most of the time, prefer the ease of harmony to the struggle of strife. We are conditioned to avoid conflict, to go along, to get along, to stay close to the wall and keep your head down and survive for no reason. Yet harmony yields nothing, nothing. And strife offers the long struggle for a never-ending victory. You know, run the race to the finish, conquer yourself that you may be welcomed home. And you may hear the words, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into my Father's house." Faith, not belief, the virtue of faith, faith. Faith is the gift that gives hope in the victory of life, that love may reign forever. Love is all you need. That's true. Love is all you need. But unlike Fab Four from Tavistock, you must struggle. Struggle hard. Dark winter approaches, and death is on the march against the city of man, with the dark desire of toppling the city of God. Rise! Heroes must rise. Rise, ye men. Rise and arm for battle. For the war rages, and the weak wage war on the meek, so they can cull the mundane drones of modernity. Oh, Rex, what are you talking about? I don't even understand. I know. I know you don't. That's why I didn't want to do a show. You see, to hear what I'm saying, you got to have a lot of common context, which we don't have. I mean, some of us do, but rarely do I find anybody who has the same common context. So we talk at each other in slogans and accomplish nothing. The Rittenhouse story is a prime example of two different meta-realities that seem very real and yet are based more upon internal mental impression than objective reality. You know, for some, there is no such thing as objective reality. So there's that, right? For others, reality exists, but it proves too difficult to navigate. So we'll go back to that moment and just live in the anodyne moment of boredom and distraction. You know, watching people get grief counselors for the Rittenhouse verdict, trying to prevent this young man from going to school in Arizona, I believe, you know, just freaking out about the white supremacy and the injustice. And on the other side, it's, you know, vindication, the great verdict, fantastic outcome. Now, that's true. Not that that's wrong. That's true. It is a great verdict in the sense that this young man, who didn't only not do anything wrong, he did everything right. And this is what people on the right miss. Well, you know, he was a stupid kid with a hero complex. He went there. He shouldn't have gone there, but, you know, I'm glad he got off. You know, that kind of nonsense that's fed to you by the likes of Fox News and Newsmax. It's a great verdict in the sense that, you know, he's free and he won't be jailed for his, you know, self-defense. But he'll be punished in other ways. Now, he might be rewarded monetarily with lawsuits and stuff, who knows, but he'll be punished in other ways. But that's missing the point. Just because we got the right verdict doesn't mean that justice exists. It doesn't mean that the whole point of this thing was to demoralize you from exercising your right to defend yourself. It's all about the conflict. Progress is achieved in the conflict. And progress is never really progress. It is always degeneracy. Unless you do something to change it. Right? But to change it, first you have to understand it. Now you got professional agitators and manipulators who know they're promoting an unreality in order to affect their ends. But the useful idiots are often true believers, most with a blind faith in their metaphysical presuppositions that form the paradigm by which they measure data. Now, you might think I'm talking about the useful idiots on the left, but I'm talking about all the useful idiots, right and left. See, learn something, anything, whatever it is that you learn, because you have to learn everything. You're not born knowing much. You have to learn. The whole point of civilization is to communicate the knowledge of experience in the ages to the next generation. And build, not destroy, build. To aspire to virtue, not promote vice. But if you learn something, you suffer from what is called the curse of knowledge.
Oh, Rex, so you're saying I should learn something, and then you're telling me that knowledge is a curse.
Yes, the curse of knowledge. It's not that knowledge in and of itself is a curse, again, depending on what you know. It's that when you know something, you make it a part of yourself, and when you communicate, that's assumed. But the person you're communicating to might not have that same knowledge, and therefore they can't hear what you're talking about because they don't have the same basic understanding, especially when you introduce the word concept fallacy, where we end up using the same words, the same language, but it has a completely different meaning. And we're all infected by it. It's not only the big lie, such as calling the November 3rd insurrection protest of January 6th the biggest insurrection since the Civil War. it's even worse than that, because often the words, as you've always used them, are intentionally erroneous. And if someone brings you the truth of the word and speaks it, you fail to grasp it. For example, the word charity. We think of it as a gift of time or money to someone or some cause less fortunate. Charity means love. Why do we change the meaning? Now, there's a natural development of language, which is not uncommon, but we intentionally have the meaning of words changed so that we can communicate. That's what the curse of knowledge is about. I think that I'm just so frustrated with suffering from the curse of knowledge doing this show and getting responses that are completely missing the mark. Now, that's not always the case. A lot of people out there are very smart, very knowledgeable, but in many cases, there are so many gaps. Like, you know, Steve Bannon, for example. There are no conspiracies, but there are no coincidences either. That's his tagline on his show called The War Room. The criminal conspiracies are right in our face. To deny them, as you talk about action, 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 is to miss the point. It's a lot of frenetic activity yielding no results. Now, I'm not knocking War Room in the sense that a lot of the information on there is very valuable. If you have a discerning ear, focus on that which is important, like the Precinct Project, which he promoted. That's a very powerful tool. Talking about January 6th, very important, especially since he and Roger Stone and Owen Schroyer and Alex Jones and I guess Mark Meadows, although, you know, you look into Mark Meadows, you'll see some shady shit. There are snakes everywhere. But, you know, they discuss that. That's important. Lindell's on there frequently talking about his investigations into the 2020 election theft. These are things we have to keep going. Those are important things on which to focus. But to dismiss it with one tagline, that there are no conspiracies, even the term conspiracy theory, which is an MK-Ultra psychological warfare term coined by the CIA, is dismissive so that you react to it when you know of an actual conspiracy, that it's not a theory, it's not a conspiracy. Well, it is a conspiracy. It's just not theoretical. Well, it's not proved. Well, see, it's hard to prove a conspiracy unless you have the subpoena power to investigate and find the source data. But even a mild level of logic would indicate that when a series of errors trend in one direction, that is an intended result that is obfuscated from public view and is usually criminal in intent, that's a conspiracy. You can see it by the pattern. The problem is you tell people about what's going to happen based on the past pattern and the data points that you have, and it's frightening, so they shrug it off as not happening, and then it happens, and then we keep moving on down the line. How many conspiracies do you need to see before you realize you're being manipulated? Now, more people than ever are aware of this now, but not enough and not deep enough. And that's because this information, which is readily available, has been kept from you. And unless you know to go looking for it and where you might find it and what it is, you might not be aware of it. And then, of course, they flood the alternate conspiratorium with all sorts of nonsense bullshit conspiracies for people to chase right on cue in order to waste your time and energy finding conspiracies that don't exist. So suffering from the curse of knowledge reasons why I haven't been doing the show that much. The other one is, of course, that it's a monologue, which some of you say you like, but frankly, I like a 20-minute monologue, and then I like to have a conversation. But my caveman is unavailable. Sometimes Butch will come on here. He might be on today. Nevertheless, it's work to overcome the curse of knowledge. And frankly, I don't have the time and the patience to do a lesson plan. I mean, the information's there. It's not like it's hidden. It's just that I'm not going to kind of, you know, bring it in every week. It could take forever. But what happens is because of the curse of knowledge. And it's sometimes why on my posts, if you see them on Gab, can do it on Facebook, I post kind of what people tell me are cryptic aphorisms. Yeah, it's to get you to think. It's not Q LARPing. It's not me being intentionally vague to confuse you. It's to jar your mind to go looking for truth. Because when I hand it to you as a statement sometimes, it just, you know, falls by the wayside with every other post because you don't have to think about it. Speaking outside of the paradigm yields confusion. You know, babble isn't about language per se. It's about the confusion of communication using language due to linguistic errors, intended and unintended, as well as basic foundational context, the basic foundational context being completely divergent, two different places. You know? Try to have a conversation with a committed leftist and a normie rightist about Rittenhouse, for example. One wants rah-rah-rah support Rittenhouse, the other one wants, you know, to indict the entire systemic white patriarchal blah, 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 right? Two different contexts, neither based on fact, neither based on anything of substance, you know? I mean, look at the contrast you have between Jussie Smollett and Kyle Rittenhouse. Smollett committed a crime on himself in order to further the MAGA racist agenda, got called out for it, and yet both camps stuck to their guns, neither addressing the fact that it was not just some washed-up faggot actor perpetrating a hoax for attention, that it's part of a much larger picture, and talking at each other, creating conflict without actual resolution. It's just conflict for the sake of conflict, which is how the control mechanism works. You had the same thing with Rittenhouse, except this was a real situation that they turned into a crime that wasn't there and then talked at each other. No one decided to take the opportunity of the publicity of the Rittenhouse case, which was a very important thing for us to have a public conversation about, but to take it down and take a look at our injustice system. Injustice system. Oh, but it worked out for Kyle, so it must be okay. No, it worked out for Kyle. That doesn't make it okay. Just because you got the right end, the process was still perverse. He should have never, ever been brought up on charges. The system didn't work as you think it's intended, which is what people keep saying. The system worked as intended, I believe, in the jury system. It didn't work as intended. I mean, it worked as intended, but not as you think it's intended, because its purpose is not justice. It is injustice. In the modern, quote, justice system in America today, voir dire and jury, which is, you know, jury selection, and jury instruction manage the jury's perception of the, quote, facts and the law, and are more indicative of outcome than any of the actual facts of any case. You psychologically profile the jury and pick them for the outcome that you believe that they're going to predetermine, and then you instruct them with the authority of a black-robed judge on how they have to think about the, quote, facts that have been entered into evidence without any knowledge of the facts not entered into evidence, and how they have to address the law. Never are they told that they have the right to adjudicate the law as well as the facts, as well as the judge, as well as the prosecutor, as well as the defense. And even if they were told those things, the question you have to ask yourself is, a, quote, jury of your peers even capable of that level of thinking? Probably not. And that's not an accident. That's by design. The jury was instructed to consider that Rittenhouse may have provoked the attacks, and then they tried to add lesser charges with which to punish him in order to get convicted headlines. Even if the jury determines that that this is in fact a simple case of self-defense, which is what the jury determined, the headlines convicted Kyle, systemic racism, gun violence, and all sorts of other things, and they're still going with it. If there was any justice, the case would have never made it to the court because the DA would have opted to take the police investigator's advice that there is no prosecutable crime here. But district attorneys, and most judges, aren't looking for truth and justice. They're looking for notches in their belt, career advancement. Maybe they've been bought by George Soros to further a particular agenda. That's the world we live in. We don't live in the world where you would look at the facts and go, look, there's no crime here. We're not going to prosecute this kid. We live in the other world. And don't expect anybody to admit they were wrong. You had some people saying, oh, man, I thought that, you know, this Rittenhouse kid crossed state lines with an illegal gun to go kill black people at a, Black Lives Matter protest. I don't know what happened, but people thought that. Now, some of them have admitted that, wow, I was misled because, you know, he shot white people. Well, doesn't really make a difference if he shot black people or white people. He shot three criminals in self-defense. Doesn't really matter what color they are, but we don't play that way. I was lied to. But will they admit to their mistake? Maybe in this instance, sure. But in general, no. Systemic racism, misogyny, toxic masculinity, misgendering, it rolls on. Irrespective of facts contrary to any proposed theory of insanity that they put forward. Just like these fucking masks. They'll see people with the fucking masks. I went away for 3 weeks to real America, free America. Didn't see a single fucking mask. Come back to the swamp, masks everywhere. It's fucking ridiculous. But people who wore the mask will continue to wear the mask and demand that you wear the mask, irrespective of the facts about the mask, because they will not admit that they were wrong before. So they have to continue to defend the position. Just like the vaccines. Even if the vaccines are killing people, we've got excess mortality all over the place rising. We've got 2,900% increase in stillborn babies. But it has to be attributed to something other than the vaccines. Because people took the vaccines, and when they're told from authority in a printed media piece that it's not the vaccine, they will automatically default to that position because they don't want to admit the mistake they made in taking the vaccine, especially because the people that they hate, like yours truly and Bond Robin, told them not to take the vaccine before they took the vaccine. They will not admit to their error. They will double, triple, and quadruple down on it. Humans tend toward pride and eschew humility. Therefore, most, will defend an error to the death. And that is part of the control mechanism. Without truth, Nothing good is possible. The idiot LARPing as president has said a lot of crazy shit. Some of it is even intelligible. But he did say one thing which the right ridiculed him for, which I don't mind because we should ridicule him no matter what he says, even if it's true, because of who he is and what he represents. He's an avatar. But he did say, choose truth over facts. Now, I saw everybody on the right attack him for that. Because you have been conditioned that if you're reasonable, normal, conservative-ish, then facts, reason, and logic rule the day. So if someone says something like choose truth over facts, that doesn't sit well with your mind. Of course you choose truth over facts, because a fact, as true as it might be, can be twisted into a lie. So we might agree on the same fact, but how that fact is put in the context and depending on your presuppositions and where the argument goes, those facts can present an untruth. And you should choose truth over facts in that regard. And I'm not saying dismiss facts. Facts are very important. You have to have a factual basis. But what I'm telling you is that factoids, reason, logic, are necessary, but insufficient without truth. It's a Thanksgiving weekend, I assume. I mean, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Today's Sunday. We had Thanksgiving on Thursday, and then on Friday, apparently, you know, kill each other to buy shit they don't need with money they don't have because the supply lines are broken and there's not going to be presents for you to buy Christmas, because nothing says I love Jesus and celebrate his birth than buying crap you don't need and giving it to people you don't like so that you don't look bad, right? The whole thing is a fucking manipulation. The entire calendar is a manipulation. I mean, today on the Western calendar is the first Sunday of Advent. On the Eastern calendar, we've got a couple more weeks before we enter Advent. And that really only applies to Anglicans, Roman Catholics, and Orthodox Catholics. Because the rest of you don't even know what Advent is, other than possibly an Advent calendar leading up to the day you get to open up the presents. You know, the argument is don't put up your Christmas tree before Thanksgiving. Okay, I can't believe they're putting Christmas music in the stores and decorations up right after Halloween. Because you go right into Christmas. And there's a reason that Thanksgiving is the last Thursday in November and the beginning of the Christmas season that abruptly comes to an end on December 25th. Heck, on the Eastern calendar, Christmas Eve until the 6th of January, 12 days after the 25th. Why do you think that is? Because it's a commercial orgy with a veneer of Christianity in order to keep mildly professing nominal Christians happy that their culture hasn't been destroyed and they're giving lip service to the Creator. But we don't really celebrate the first advent of Christ in anticipation of his parousa, his second advent, his return. And the most profound thing that could have happened, which is that your Creator enters time as a baby. But back to Thanksgiving, right? We're supposed to be giving thanks to God for all the beautiful, bountiful things we have, right? And we always talk about the pilgrims and about 1621 and about the Indians, and then you get the other people saying, oh, it was a slaughter of indigenous peoples. No, they got along. Oh, no, it was the end of communism. Blah, 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 blah. Well, let's talk about facts, and then let's talk about truth. Sorry, I was just checking the console. So American Thanksgiving, which is a great holiday. And I always get told, it's a great holiday because all Americans celebrate it irrespective of their religious beliefs. Well, is that true? I mean, what is a pagan or an atheist giving thanks to? Well, most people are monotheist, Rex, so at least monotheists can all agree on it. Really?
So we agree that there's one God and that unites us?
Because I got to tell you something.
Jews and Muslims, the other monotheists other than us Christians apparently, don't worship the same God. Some, quote, Christian sects don't worship the same God. Ask Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses about their God. He's not Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But nevertheless, right, that's what, it's a great holiday. It's an important holiday. First Thanksgiving in America, in our geographic region here, was in 1565. Second one was in 1585. Third one was in 1619. The fourth one was in 1621. That's the one we focus on. You may not have known about the others. 1565, St. Augustine, Florida. 1585, Roanoke, Virginia. Today, North Carolina, but back then, Virginia. The first English settlement here. The first English settlement here. You think they gave thanks? We don't know much because they disappeared, the lost colony. They came back 1607, not them, but, you know, English people. And in 1619, they celebrated a Thanksgiving feast. We're told 1619 is the beginning of African slavery in the West. Nonsense. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. It's one of the worst things that we've done as a people is bring over African slaves. But the slave trade, including and maybe especially in Africa, was long before 1619, and it wasn't committed by English people. 1619 was a Thanksgiving feast at Jamestown here in Virginia. It wasn't until 1621 that the Puritan Calvinist Protestants who imported the totalitarian primitive communism from Geneva to New England had their Thanksgiving. Now, presumably because they discarded some of that totalitarian communism of Calvin that they brought over from Geneva, and they had a bountiful harvest, and they celebrated. But despite what the Yankees bleat about, orders, historical societies, teaching about American Thanksgiving, 1621 was not all that important. Your history is controlled. No one knew, oh, Rex, what do you mean, the Order's Historical Society? See, stuff like that, that if I were to explain it to you, we'd be here for 47 hours. Read Anthony Sutton's exposés on this, for one. Right? The Order of Skull and Bones. Yale University. America's WASP establishment. Men of the Order, a secret society with diabolical intentions, established America's Historical Society that basically manages what you do and do not learn for history. Hence why 1621 and the Pilgrims and all that bullshit is so important. You see how it works? It's a manipulation. It is a conspiracy. And if you don't examine it, you'll just go along with the tide. You say Thanksgiving, people think of pilgrims and turkeys and Indians and pilgrims having a feast together. First of all, I don't think there was any turkey there. It was probably a goose. That's besides the point. It's part of the mythos of who we are. Why do we have to be so Yankee Protestant? This nation was knitted together from a fabric of different cultures. Yes, we're one American people. But we have localized cultures. The whole point of federalism was to promote those beautiful Western cultures and that wonderful tapestry. But we've homogenized it all. Town has the same stores. Everybody speaks the same banal nonsense. We all watch the same fake news and come at it from the left and the right.
There really is no diversity of thought. The facts are bullshit, and we ignore the truth, and we further the conflict. Everything that exists is reality, created by a creator, one creator, who is Father and Son and Holy Spirit. Oh, Rex, that's just your personal, private, religious view. It's a fact of revelation, not reason. But it is the most reasonable revelation because it is revealed.
That's just circular logic, Rex. You're saying it's a reasonable revelation because it's revealed. No.
It isn't. At the meta level, it isn't circular because he who reveals it is the source of all that exists. And no other explanation suffices completely. Nevertheless, freedom permits errors, and that really is the crux of the matter. For errors lead to nothing, the opposite of everything. And when your meta-reality is based on nothing, it is literally nothing more than a negation of everything, a negation of good, a negation of beauty, a negation of truth, of sanity, of reason, of life itself. Oh, Rex, what are you ranting about? I'm ranting about the fundamental problem, because ideology replaces revealed truth. I had to drink, but that was a good place to pause. You need to contemplate on that one. Ideology replaces revealed truth. And the ideas you think are actually imparted to you in a subtle manner, inducing you to take ownership of the ideology, you know, that approximates just enough truth to appear to have credibility, right? So it has enough truth just to create the appearance of credibility, harmonizing the received ideology with the perceived sense data in concord with the fading natural human capacities for thought. Building your paradigm on false presuppositions by which you measure everything your sense data perceives. You get that? Where did I see this? I saw it somewhere. I think it's one of Sutton's books. He actually goes into it. You really need to be familiar with Anthony Sutton. He did great teaching, not talked about often enough. He has a whole section. Which book is this? I have so many of these things. America's Secret Establishment, Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones by Anthony Sutton. I always reference stuff, but I don't really dig it out. And when I have a co-host, it's actually really good, but nevertheless, I'm trying to get you to build your knowledge base so that you can really start to understand these things, right? Never mind. I'll get to it later. But basically, it talks about your perception that you. And actually, I think G. Edward Griffin in that opening clip talked about it, where you think these ideas are yours as if you came up with them, but they've actually been intentionally imparted to you. And that's part of something called psychological warfare. Psychological warfare, which the church committee, which kind of was a limited hangout, I don't know if the church and Pike commissions were actually in on it, but like all congressional things, when the CIA needs to disclose something that they've done, they do a limited hangout, you know, get a slap on the wrist, and then most of it just disappears. But, you know, we talk about the Operation Mockingbird that the Church Commission exposed and that it was ended. Yeah, look at the fake news. It's not ended. It's worse than ever. But that's besides the point. In the Church Committee report, they defined propaganda as any organized effort or movement to disseminate information or a particular doctrine by means of news, special arguments, or appeals designed to influence the thoughts and actions of any given group. And then they define psychological warfare as the planned use by a nation of propaganda and activities other than combat, which communicate ideas and information intended to influence the opinions, attitudes, emotions, and behavior of foreign groups. And the only reason they said that is because the CIA is not legally allowed to operate within the United States. But forget foreign groups. They're doing it to you. Back to the quote. In ways that will support the achievement of national aims. The most effective kind of propaganda was defined as, the subject move. First of all, let's just back up here. Achievement of national aims. It's not achievement of national aims. It's the achievement of the aims of the CIA, more precisely, the order that created and populates and controls the CIA. And not just the CIA, because it's everywhere. It's metastasized. Most of the important people who work for the CIA don't actually work in Langley with a CIA badge. Let's just leave it at that. But here it is. The most effective kind of propaganda is one where the subject moves in the direction you desire for reasons which he believes to be his own. I'm going to read that again. The subject, that's you, you're the subject. The subject moves in the direction you, that's them, desire for reasons which he believes to be his own. Get that? You think they're your ideas. They're not. You got them from somewhere. Did you get them from somewhere true or some bullshit? I hate to tell you this, but it's some bullshit. And waking up to it is a very difficult thing to do. But once you do, you got to keep pushing. Because what do? You've got these erroneous presuppositions, bullshit ideology, mangled truth, right? And then they overlay Hegelian dialectics to seduce you into defending the thesis or entering into conflict by propagating the antithesis, yielding a new synthesis that becomes the thesis of the age and presents as political persuasion. I found that part in Anthony Sutton's book. It's on page... Well, it starts on page 118, I think, where he quotes, first he quotes President Wilson. This is important. Some of the biggest men in the U.S. in the fields of commerce and manufacturing know there is a power so organized, so subtle, so complete, so pervasive, that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. Now, which power was this? Well, Wilson's Secretary of the Navy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and Anthony Sutton actually has done a great job on telling you who the Delanos and the Roosevelts are. You should check that out. But and look, if you don't want to buy the books and read them, that's fine. There's a million videos with him out there. Find them. Watch them. This is a quote from Franklin Roosevelt to Colonel Edward Mandel House, Philip Drew administrator. Edward Mandel House was essentially Wilson's handler.
Well, President Wilson had a handler. All presidents have a handler, unless they are themselves the handler, like George New World Order Bush. This is what he said. The real truth of the matter is, as you and I know, that a financial element in the largest centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson. And I am not wholly accepting the administration of Woodrow Wilson. The country is going through a repetition of Jackson's fight with the Bank of the United States, only on a far bigger and broader basis. You're panicking because right-wing media has told you that Joe Biden's nominee for the Federal Reserve has communist ties. And right on cue, your hair's on fire about it. The Federal Reserve was a conspiracy foisted upon you by the same people who fomented the Bolshevik Revolution in the Soviet Union and the rise of Nazism in Germany. Think about that. Both, now I'm on page 118 of Sutton's book, both Marx and Hitler have their philosophical roots in Hegel.
What?
Yes, both Marx and Hitler. Oh, I thought we were supporting the Russians, were the Soviets were our allies in World War II against the menace of the Nazis. And then we switched the flip right after we defeated the Nazis. Did we really defeat the Nazis, or did we just destroy Germany, except for the IG Farben and Rockefeller factories, and then bring those Nazis into the Soviet Union and the United States to set up their space program? Yeah? Yeah. The Nazi Space Administration. Then we switched the flip, and it was the Cold War against Russia. You get it? From this system, I'm reading now page 119 of Sutton's book, America's Secret Establishment, Introduction to the Order of Skull and Bones. From this system of Hegelian philosophy comes the historical dialectic that all historical events emerge from a conflict between opposing forces. These emerging events are above and different from the conflicting events. Any idea or implementation of an idea may be seen as thesis. This thesis will encourage emergence of opposing forces known as the antithesis. The final outcome will be neither thesis nor antithesis, but a synthesis of the two forces in conflict. Now, why is that important? Because the curse of knowledge. I look at everything through a lens like that. You often don't. Hence, we have difficulty communicating. Oh, I see a Georgia number. That means that Butch is here, and I assume he wants to chat. So how long have I been doing? Holy crap, I've been going over an hour. All right, let me transition to this. But let me just finish up this point about that overlay of Hegelian dialectics designed to seduce you. I just read you Sutton. You really need to get familiar with this concept. And it's a very simple concept, but it's also extremely complex, and applying it is not that easy. It's taken me a long time to do it. I've been thinking about this stuff for decades. If you're new to it, it's even more difficult, and time is really short. So you gotta get up to speed, because the psychological manipulation diminishes your noetic capacity to apprehend truth. That renders you a node in the viral spread of the most vile virus, diabolical deceit, germinating from a minuscule lie upon which a superstructure of reason, logic, and facts is built, adding rational credibility to the nihilistic negation of reality, engendering mass confusion and yielding increasing conflict, which is the process of unbecoming masquerading as being. The process is the punishment. The process is punishing.
and you are the nihilistic node, perhaps unbeknownst to yourself, but you're the nihilistic node, which is actually more devastating than those who willfully propagate lies and death. That makes sense? In other words, the ones perpetrating this aren't doing as much damage as you for unwittingly being a node in this propagation of deceit and death. You really got to cut that shit out, but you can't until you know that you're doing it. See, if your meta-reality is based on a lie, you will be trapped in never-ending diabolical dialectic. This versus that, another thing, problem, reaction, solution. Technically, we've been trapped in the dialectical mode since Adam was evicted from the garden. But never before the modern age have dialectics been artfully elevated to the level of meta-paradigms. Some secret societies have held these things over the ages. Skull and Bones is one. It's kind of the American node of the latest iteration, but there's been lots of them. But they burst forth in the so-called Renaissance. Delicate dialect, the new humanism. Yielding rationalism and devolving into nominalism. Giving us neo-Hellenic lies to replace the truths of Christian civilization. Really kind of burst forth with Descartes' cogito ergo sum, right? I think, therefore I am. It was an absolute blasphemy. You are because God is I am. That's it. It's not you think, therefore you are. You are before you think. And why are you? Because he is. And then you go to Kant, right? Where I think in the Collins Brothers book they call it the Kantian rift. But you go to Kant or Kant. And then David Hume. And this synthesis of dialectics kind of gave an anti-birth to nihilism. The devil's clever deceit is that the meta-narrative is built upon nothing, on no thing, and leading to no thing. So we may as well eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow there's nothing. The only innovation of the great leap forward of the Western Cultural Revolution of the 60s was rock and roll. Sex and the drugs are nothing but a bohemian retread. Hurling the ancient bacchanalian hedonism into the modern age through the, we sin to prove that we are saved Protestant cults. Pagan revivals, Oriental mysticism, Kabbalistic magic, and a new age of a new order. It's all bread and circuses. Bread and circuses. And let's keep in mind something. Now, many of you were born before the 60s. Some of us were born after. But it doesn't matter. That's the milieu in which our culture is currently mired. Perverse sex magic, mind-altering potions, primal rhythmic sounds, and human sacrifice. We're about to bring this full circle. Human sacrifice, especially the children, especially young boys. This is a ritualistic, liturgical consecration to the evil one. It is a dark parody of the true liturgy. Drugs, both recreational and perhaps especially prescription drugs prescribed by the witch doctors, are everywhere. Sexual perversion, everywhere. Sodomy isn't just about homosexuals. Sodomy is every sexual activity apart from procreational sex within the sacrament of holy matrimony. Rock and roll, rap, hip-hop, pop crap, that all that has little musical value, right? But it inspires revolution and abortion. the murder of the most innocent and most vulnerable, and now a global genocide and mass sterilization program. We are engaged in a global consecration to evil in a technocratic, anodyne fashion, rendering it nearly imperceptible to the banal drones that populate our little rock. We forget so much. We forget almost everything important and true, but we champion liberty. We champion liberty without truth. And liberty without truth is the freedom to negate. It's nihilistic. We need to remember. And as I was preparing to kind of figure out what the hell I was going to talk about for apparently an hour and 15 minutes, or, well, I guess the opening clip, an hour and 10 minutes straight, was anamnesis. And we'll get into that later. I'm going to bring Butch on. But anamnesis, you know, when in the gospel Christ is quoted saying, do this in memory of me. He's not talking about like, you know, remember back when I did this and, you know, it's a deeper memory, a memory that goes to your very being. It's remembering who you are and who made you. And it's that kind of memory that is the only way you can break diabolical dialectics. And with that, I'm going to bring Butch Robinson, Bond Robin, Archpriest Simeon Elias on to wage war against your ears.
You mean that liberal yuppie bullshit about a good fight? This isn't fucking Yale. A good fight is one you win.
Hey, Butch, are you there?
Yeah. You know, I actually phoned in when I went and laid down in my recliner, almost taking a nap.
I put you to sleep, huh?
So I would. But I'm gonna tell you what. I almost feel a little bit guilty hearing my voice on your channel because you've been on fire. I know it's been a struggle. I know that it's not coming easy, but the things that you're saying are so central and so very important. And it's kind of truth without a filter, and you have it right. A very, you know, a lot of people hearing, you know, I've been through this here lately where I've run across people that I thought were fairly awake, that I would make some statement, and they would just go ballistic, because they really were not comprehending, the reality outside of that Hegelian, you know, dialectic paradigm that they live in. And when you challenge something, they want to kill you. I mean, they are instantly just hateful. And I wanted to, I thought, you know, while I was listening, if there was something that I could add, and I can't add anything to what you've said so far, other than to give an example that that older people like myself lived through, where, you know, by the middle part of the 20th century, by the 60s, 70s, I mean, it was even getting that way in the 50s and probably even the 40s, where if you talked about evil, people looked at you like you were nuts. And in fact, people who like insisted that there were spirits of evil, some of those people wound up in insane asylums, because the culture had written the reality of evil off. If there was any kind, I mean, it wasn't until the 1980s that a psychologist, I mean, the psychiatrist, psychologists were the satanic crafts that Satan used to make himself disappear, to become this fun little horned bearded character that everybody joked about. And it got to the point that the reality of evil, you know, didn't exist. So in the 80s, Scott Peck wrote his little book, Psychiatrist, or Psychologist, I don't remember which he was, but approaching human evil, that there was a reality of human evil. And he wrote this book describing a bunch of cases of people that he had run into in his practice, that the only thing that could explain what was happening with them was their own evil. And he never stepped past that to say, hey, this is not, that there is some evil beyond just human evil. And the kind of examples that he gave were like, and we see it all the time, that there's somebody that I discuss things on Facebook that you witness that says, I just like it that way. Here it is. Well, that's just me. I just like it that way. So he gave an example of a woman that every time she went somewhere, she got lost. And it was an evil that possessed her to keep her in confusion, to keep her from being able to really coordinate with anybody else in her life or whatever. And so you give her directions, and she calls and says that she's 50 miles out of the way, and you say, well, didn't you turn on highway so-and-so? Did you see that? And she said, yeah, I saw it, but I didn't want to turn there. And to her, it made sense that she didn't want to turn there. It wasn't her idea. Somebody had written it down for her. She just didn't want to turn there. And that sort of human evil, human delusion actually exists. But then there is real evil that's cunning, that is plotting. Actively seeking the destruction of humankind. So in the process then of those years that everybody's denying that there was evil, there were classes of people who were actively seeking evil. And now there are hundreds of millions of them. And we're not talking about tens of millions or, few million. There are hundreds of millions of them in this 7 billion people on the planet. There are hundreds of millions of people who have actively sought evil, who are cooperating together in a massive conspiracy to cull the human race down to a very small number. Them. Just them. That's real. It's happening. And the people who are going on lollygagging along like, whatever the Republican Party is going to do or whatever the Congress is going to do or whatever, and refusing to see this evil genocide that is happening, their fate is sealed. And I really don't know if there's that much that you can say to them about it. I'm dealing with people. I'm worn out, in fact, from prayer requests from people who are struggling with all kinds of really ridiculous, unexpected kinds of ailments that a year ago were perfectly healthy until they got the vaccine.
Yep.
And the numbers of them the people that I know that are calling on me personally that they couldn't. You said it the first part of the program, that we were screaming, don't get the vaccine, and then they wound up getting the vaccine, and now here they're in trouble. And already, you might be able to see it in my videos, the grief that is just living with me, because quite a few of them are already dead. And, it is where we've been saying that this was a struggle between life and death. And you talk about anamnesis. The anamnesis I call the eternal moment, the reality of eternity, connection to God, noetic, the connection to God in by the noetic faculty, the mind, but the spiritual mind that is in contact with God. And if you're where you're supposed to be, it's in constant contact with God. It exists in the eternal moment. It exists in the anamnesis. Say it for me. I always blow it. Anamnesis. There we go. The constant remembrance, the constant contact. And you know, what is it that we're in constant contact with? Whom it's eternity. You know, that God exists in eternity. And when you think about the terms of eternity, you know, God the Father is eternal, had no beginning, has no end, right? Mm-hmm. And Jesus could say, of being, I am the Alpha and the Omega, I'm the beginning and the ending. But God the Father, no beginning, no ending. And when you're in contact with God in eternity, and it's that part that so many people don't get, that, you know, if there is an eternity, it is also now. Mm-hmm. And to grab hold and be in contact with that eternal, it has power to affect, you know, this plane of existence, this space-time, you know, mortal life. It has the ability to affect here in ways that people cannot even imagine the power of, and they dismiss it as if it's not real. And in fact, if anything happens in this world that doesn't fit the physical laws of the world, laws of physics, whatever, but yet, you know, if you witnessed it, it's happened, they'll break their backs, go through all kinds of mental masturbation, trying to prove the natural cause for this thing. I think about the...
Making up the causes. Dark matter.
Yeah. The
multiple
yeah,
universes.
Yeah.
Metaverses.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? Saint John Chrysostom said that those who give up the knowledge of God, you know, are willing to believe in the most absurd things. And so there, you know, that's an example of it. But the very idea that, you know, when people talk about, well, what's the answer? You can listen to me. Well, Butch or Bond, you know, what's the answer? And I, you know, all I can do is quote to them Alexander Solzhenitsyn, you know, that the dividing line of good and evil runs through the heart of every man. Mm-hmm. And you could also say that the power to affect what's here. I mean, we've got these hundreds of millions of people who are actively drawing on evil powers to control and change. You know, I guess it's the same concept, really, because all of the controlling is changing and controlling. But to control and change what is physically, spiritually happening here on Earth, and they're actively doing that. You know, and we're at the point, just like that point in the middle of the 20th century, that we couldn't view that there was such thing as evil. Now we can't view that evil has an army of hundreds of millions who are knowledgeable and actively participating with it.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, like Bannon, telling the very first lie, there are no conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you hit on that the other day, I thought, yeah, you know, that exactly fits. There are no conspiracies. Everything that happens in the dark to create an effect in nature, you know, in the flow of time, in our lives or whatever, that's a conspiracy. All of it. And this very idea that it's not just a few. You know, when Obama did his civilian army, and they did it 2 or 3 years after he announced his civilian army, we began to see them producing their army. You know, it was a civilian army that did Sandy Hook. You know, a civilian army that did Ferguson. You know, civilian army that did Kenosha. You know, you can name, you know, probably 50 or 60. Yeah, Waukesha, yeah. And you could probably name 50 or 60 other incidents. You know, if I were in front of my computer, I could sound more intelligent. But name a bunch of them. But that's all, this evil army, you know, these very, you know, it's a very unusual psychological operation. These people who are being paid, you know, every 2 weeks or every month they're getting their check. They are, you know, they may do other things. They may work some menial jobs or whatever. You know, they may do this or that, but they are all coordinated. And all it takes is a few taps on the computer keys to put plan X in place, and the right people and the right equipment show up.
Yep, compartmentalized and coordinated. And it doesn't – what people – like you just mentioned 100 million, and that's cooperators and the knowing that there's an agenda. But what people can't grasp is that there might be a few powerful individuals that can do this, because the argument is always – there's no way that so few could have control over so many. They don't understand the pervasive nature of this embedded conspiracy, that it doesn't take much more than what you just said, a tap here and a nudge there of a compartmentalized independent cell to unleash forces that further the dialectic, because everybody's been preconditioned to participate even unbeknownst to themselves.
Exactly. You know, the little Rittenhouse boy, mm-hmm. you know, out there all by himself with his AK. You know, I'm not saying that what he did was wrong, but the fact of the matter is that what he did out there didn't make any difference whatsoever. You know, him standing there, that, you know, gave that icon of one person standing up. Well, that's great. And mm-hmm. you know, I guess we need to see a whole hell of a lot more of that, but mm-hmm. on areas that are a lot more sane, like, you know, parents, why the hell are you putting your children in public schools?
It's insane.
You know, why are you sending them into these hell holes to be programmed into every kind of Luciferian idea that there is, you know, these brainwashing Luciferian sinners, and where the government is claiming the right to shoot them up with nanotechnology, death programmed biologics, without your knowledge, and you're still sending them to school, and where on the one hand, I did a video the other day talking about the truth is a foreign language. So many people who claim to be awake, they're like people who are primarily English speakers, but they have a good knowledge of French, and you know, they can dabble in French, and they can, you know, make you think that they're fairly knowledgeable in French, but then when it comes down to their real thinking and their real actions, it's English all the way. And we're seeing that with these people who are totally caught up in the Hegelian dialectic, this right-left dialogue. They can't get out of it. They cannot pull themselves out of it. When they get to what is really happening in the world, it's like dabbling in French. They turn to the side and they dabble in that language of truth. And they mentally assent to all kinds of things that they know are true. And then they jump right back into that Hegelian dialectic as if they don't know anything whatsoever. And they think that if they dare let somebody know that they speak a little French, that they will be permanently outcast, and they don't have the guts to speak the truth.
And
you know, let's face it, you guys, when you and Trog both over a period of time, with your urgency to say what was true outside, you know, even the run that we had with Trump, even during that time, you kept saying things that were true, both of you, that you ran your audience away.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You know, they didn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
They didn't want to hear it.
And they still don't. You know, I think it's sad. And that's what I was talking about, that we can say things and someone can hear things, but even though the words are the same, the concept is completely missed because of that lack of anamnesis. There is no remembrance of truth, and everything then gets bifurcated. And it's because we're all in a cult. We're all born into a cult. We're all programmed in a cult. And the only way you get out of a cult is to be deprogrammed. And you mentioned the mid of the 20th century. Well, in 1950, it was the first time that the English word was used, brainwashing.
Yeah.
And it was transliterated from the Chinese. Now, here's the crazy thing. What's the Chinese transliterated from? Well, in Chinese, it's Ji Nao, X-I-N-A-W, Ji Nao, brainwashing. How amazing is that?
Well, we've got Ji Nao, you know, that is truly amazing. But the idea of the power of the language of evil, it just continuing to grow and absorb and grow and absorb. I would almost bet that along with that, that the imagery of the movie about the same time, I think it was around 1950, The Blob. You remember?
I've seen that movie.
Well, you know, where it's just taking over anything that it touches. Mm-hmm. And that's been the way with the mind war, to the point that that if you speak outside of that, there are very few people who can hear anything that you're saying. But you in that hour and 12 minute monologue, you know, past your opening, after about 20 minutes, you begin to preach the gospel. I mean, literally, there have been, you know, so many people. Anthony Sutton was one, but there have been so many people who are telling us the nuts and bolts of the mind war, how it worked, how it's happened, and it was really an excellent. I think I'm going to try to see if I can pull off that monologue by itself, because it is a teaching moment. That's why I said to you on Facebook, I don't guess you got it, that I was going to lay back in my recliner and for you to keep teaching, because you're really doing an excellent job.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'm so tired. I sound like a bumbling idiot this evening. I have strong days and not so strong days, and this has been one of those not so strong ones. But I don't have anything else to say, Rex. I'll respond to you. We can talk, but you're going to have to take the lead.
No, that's fine, and no, I'm going to let you go and wrap this thing up, because I got to tell you, I'm tired. We're all tired. This is all right. I have a prickly personality, and I use a lot of foul language and vile imagery because it gets people's attention. But you once told me that, you know, it's because the softest hearts have to have the hardest shells.
Yeah,
you can't. You can't know what's actually happening, see what's actually happening, both on the global scale and anecdotally and personally, and not feel the weight of it.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost more people I know this year than any other year of my life. And it's not because these are older people. It is because of what's happening. And
they're being called.
Especially
they're being called.
Called. Yeah. And especially with the children and the stillbirths, it's weighing on all of us. That's part of the psychological warfare. That's part of the terrorizing. But it is weighing on all of us, and I think that's why I focus so much on that struggle. Because the fact of the matter is that that's all we have. We have nothing else. And we have to just keep struggling, no matter how tired we are, but we have to encourage each other because it is not easy. And those who aren't struggling with it, that's the easier path because you don't feel the weight of it. But it doesn't change the reality of it. And I think that's where we are. So,
and you know, the uptick of worldwide deaths, and particularly in younger people, that all those statistics are coming in. You know, it's what, you know, when you have a little bit of vision, you're just not totally blind. You have a little bit of vision. And back in the winter of 2020, in March, and I'm saying, look, you know, this COVID isn't it. The vaccine's going to be the killer. You know, the vaccine is going to be the bioweapon. And I knew it, you know, as certain as I can look at my hand and know my hand here. I knew that was the plan. I knew that was what was going to happen. And I didn't have any kind of, you know, documented evidence. I just knew it, that this was, you know, judging by the people involved, judging by their spiritual motivation and their goal. What would you do? Well, you don't have to be a genius to know that you put up a fake pandemic. You stampede all the fearful people to taking your death drugs, and you know, and you're choosing, you know, with these different batches, you're choosing, you know, these people are going to pretend like they're vaccinated and they got saline, and these people got another layer of nanotechnology altering, and these people got a slow to quick death shot. And that's the three categories, and they are shooting people up every single day. Did you see my last video with the indigenous guys from Australia?
Yes.
And that, you know, those guys saying, you know, here they're using us as a guinea pig. You know, they had taken that population and gave them a universal income. You know, where they got their cards and they didn't have to worry about working. They could work and make more money if they want to, but they had subsistence living with their universal income, a card, you know, given by the government. And so here it was, they went into that, and then very quickly they start killing them off. And, you know, all this free stuff that they've been giving everybody, and it's just in preparation, lulling them. It's like feeding a cow apples on the way to the slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's exactly what's going on. But
seducing somebody is better than frightening them. And like I said a million times, the model is Brave New World, not 1984. It's not a masculine, robust, in-your-face tyranny. It's a soft, feminine, subtle, pleasure-driven tyranny, and that's why people can't perceive it. It's South Korea, not North Korea.
Yeah, and both of them just as deadly. You see how articulate I'm being.
was the perfect answer to that one. You put out a few videos in the past couple of days, each an hour long, and I'm not going to keep you here chatting with me. I'm actually going to wrap this up because I have to say that first hour was heavy.
Yeah,
it was heavy on me.
And I'm telling you what, you're reaching to a depth that is there that you and I both know is difficult to get to. You know, it's easy to talk about political bullshit.
It's
difficult to get to what you just said.
It is, and I'll tell you, the difficulty, I mean, I can feel it physically, actually, but the primary difficulty, and I think what inspired this episode, is the difficulty of conveying these things in a one-hour monologue when the context is absent in the audience. I'm not saying all of you. I'm just saying, by and large, the general audience. The context is absent. People are aware of the dialectics, problem, reaction, solution, but in a surface way and not realizing. I think
Come on,
the biggest...
Tell the truth of it, Rex. So the truth is, chances are, of most of your audience that, you know, I don't mean to insult your audience, but, you know, I'd say the same thing.
I do it every week.
is it most of these libertarian and conservative idiots think that the problem is the other side?
Yes.
They all think that the problem, that all the Republicans, you know, gonna get the House back in 22. They think that all of this evil that's coming at us is all because of the Democrats.
Yes, that's right.
And then, you know, some of them may be a little more sophisticated, where they say, well, it's not actually party, but it is conservative and, you know, kind of leftist Marxist ideology. But yet, some of the Marxists that we see in this culture have been some of the greatest truth tellers in their analysis. When Bush had the entire country by the nose, leading them to sacrifice our sons and daughters in war for no reason, you know, other than their greed, absolutely no national security reason whatsoever, and creating, you know, the false flags to do it and all that, so many of the leftists in their analysis were telling the reality of what was going on, and then the conservatives said, well, they're just saying that because they hate Bush.
Mm-hmm. The terrorists hate us for our freedoms. What freedom?
Yeah.
Talking about.
Yeah. I'll tell you, talking about freedoms, I think the saddest note I've felt, and besides losing people, but the saddest note that I've felt so far is that young middle-aged Aborigines, you know, part Caucasian, part Aborigines, pleading to the world to come and help them, you know, to the international community, and without a clue that's who's doing it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, it's time to pick up their machetes.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to die fighting than die, you know, in a whimper.
Yes.
And it's time for them to pick up their mallets, their hammers, their shovels, their, you know, they gave up their weapons 2 decades ago like idiots, their guns. And now here, the folks who have sense enough to hang on to their guns, despite all the peaceniks talking, you know, and a lot of people on the right, you know, saying, well, you know, really, we don't want to do anything that's going to cause any disturbance when they're killing you.
Yeah, it's a delicate line. Clearly, they want to, and again, it goes back to that Hegelian, they want us to pop off violently so that they can impose even more tyranny. It has to be done in an intelligent way, but passivity and redirecting that energy towards electoral politics is not the answer. And that's where I think people are missing the point. But it goes back to that understanding that Hegelian system is that when you react rationally to the thesis, you're furthering the dialectic. And that's what has to be broken, and that's what people are failing to do.
But, Rex, in terms of the right of natural self-defense, you have to draw a line that says, you're not going to do this to my wife. You're not going to do this to my daughter. You're not going to do this to my son. You're not going to do this to my grandchildren. That you have to draw a line. That here is the line that at this point you come at me, I'm going to kill you.
Well, it's just simple.
And we have to get there.
Let me explain it to people. This is a great point because it's cold, simple logic. And they need to know this too. I mean, just think of the objective facts. If you truly believe that these vaccines are lethal, they're coming to force you to take it and force your family to take it, then your life is being threatened. And the only rational reaction...
It's time to kill them. It's time to kill them. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Now, someone can argue, well, maybe the vaccine isn't really that lethal. That's irrelevant at this point. Let's just talk about what people perceive it to be.
Well, it doesn't even have, it's not the matter of the vaccine, the vaccine's lethality. It has to do with human autonomy, bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do not have the right to stick your dick up my ass without my permission. And neither do you have the right to stick a needle in my arm without my permission. You understand? I mean, it's that simple. I now may give a gross analogy on purpose.
Oh, very
because
valid.
you know that you have the bodily autonomy that says, no, I don't care how much you want to stick that dick up my ass, it's not going to happen. You know, the best thing that I saw, you don't, Steven Crowder saying, you don't have to take a beating. You know, you don't have to take a vaccine. You don't have to take a raping. And those all have to do with personal autonomy, that I have the right over my own body. And no, you're not going to come and monkey with my DNA. And not only that, you can say, okay, I'm going to come and shoot you up with some vitamins I think are really good for you, and it may actually be good for my health, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, no, you're not going to shoot me up. You know, you're not going to substitute my conscience, my right of conscience, for your own. You're
right.
Saying this is good for me, and I'm saying I don't know and I don't believe it. So, no, I'm not going to let you do it. If you try to force yourself for what you even think is good for me, I'm going to kill you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's bodily autonomy, and people haven't got there yet. I mean, some people have, but we have to be there because that's the only possibility that we have when people start pushing back that hard is the only possibility that a great number could survive.
And I think that's precisely why they've been playing these games of demanding things, giving them authority, appearance of legality, appearance of coerced compliance, when in fact none of that exists except in perception, and getting more and more people to comply, which is why they keep pushing back the dates of these mandates and the requirements and everything else, because they know that they can't stand a legal challenge. They know that they can't force it upon people who know better. But what they can do is keep pretending that it has the force of compliance, and more people are worn down, stop struggling, and say, I can't take it anymore. It's easier to just go along with
it. Well, it has to, but honest to God, it has to go one step further. It doesn't have to say, no, I'm going to resist you. It has to go that one step farther, that if you try, that's one thing. Here, I'm telling you no, but if you come at me, I'm going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get there. And I know that's uncomfortable saying. It sounds so radical, I'm going to kill you. But if you try to overcome my bodily autonomy, I'm a sane person in, you know, sound mind, in humility before God, and I am not going to let you destroy any of the innocent people around me or come at me against my will. Just not going to happen. And we have to get there. And, you know, they have to know, like Solzhenitsyn said, that if they decide that they want to come with their power, that it's going to cost them. And we're down to that one-on-one, it's going to cost you. You send some bureaucrat, clerk, whatever, to come and try to overcome my bodily autonomy, I'm going to kill you. You know, before you manage to overcome my bodily autonomy, now you may be able to overcome my bodily autonomy with a bullet, but that's the only choice I'm going to give you. And we have to get there, Rex. No pussyfooting around. We have to get there, and we have to say it clearly. People have to understand that they have the right to protect their own bodies. You do not have to take a raping. You do not have to take a beating. You do not have to take a vaccine. You do not have to submit to being tested with a Schwab stuck 4 inches up your nose.
Why do they have to stick that thing up 4 inches up your nose with the most spreadable lethal virus ever? Couldn't it be easier to get at it? Just saying. Oh, I'm sorry. I was using logic again. This is not a logical virus. The vaccine is the virus. Yes. No, I think you have that right. If they tell you that to state that 2 plus 2 is 5, you have that same right. They can't force you to say 2 plus 2 is 5.
Yeah, that's trying to overcome my psyche. And so much of this that's going on right now is trying to literally destroy your soul. And bodily autonomy includes protecting your own soul.
And they're going to come at you. On that one, they're going to come at you with a psychiatrist. Well, you're of sound mind and you're resisting this. But really, it's good for you, and you're clearly not sound. You're insane, so therefore we're going to have to commit you and give you the jab.
And you see, that's where the issue is joined, and somebody has to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's either you or them.
Yeah, people had better. Yeah, people had better understand it. You know, it's there. If the choice was, a 2-minute firefight, or spending 7 years in prison, choose the 2-minute firefight. Because trust me, you won't survive. There may be some body that comes out the other end of a 7-year stint, but it will not be you.
Correct.
We're there. They're altering your DNA.
Yeah. The idea is to take your free will away.
Right.
Which even God
and
won't
so,
violate. How dare
right,
they?
Exactly. You know, but Satan has no problem with this army of hundreds of millions right now. And there are hundreds of millions cooperating in the satanic army.
Mm-hmm. And you see it.
So, yeah.
And they're displaying it. They display the symbols. They engage in the rituals. There was that rap concert, I think, in Texas that was satanic at its core. The Getty wedding was full of satanic and secret society imagery. It's in your face. And what they want it to be is in your face, where you don't recognize it as satanic.
Right.
And you accept it.
Right. Now, I'm not talking about any kind of conspiracy. I'm talking about the backbone of every adult human with a clue to stand up and refuse to be a barnyard animal. Which at that point, either you're going to be a barnyard animal, they're going to tag you, and call you at will, or you're not. There's just no place in between.
And part of the problem, again, this is part of the Hegelianism, part of the problem is the only reason we're not Australia is because we're so armed.
Yeah.
And so they have to label you mentally unfit. They have to confiscate your guns before we get to that point. Now, the other alternative is to purge the military and police forces of the sane and only keep the insane and bring in foreign troops. And now we're talking about 1861 on a mass scale.
Yeah, you just walked all across. You just stomped across a demarcation line that should have never been crossed.
Mm-hmm.
You said, but first they'll confiscate your weapons. No, they won't. Not as long as I have breath. No, they won't. I don't care what kind of court order or anything else. No, they won't.
Correct. And that's my point.
And
it lulls us into the belief that everything's okay, but the only reason for the delay is because we are armed, and where it would go is an unwinnable situation for them.
Yeah, and we better keep it that way. And that means no confiscation of weapons.
Correct.
You know, and you know, you need to start, you know, forming your little trusted groups. And I'm not talking about any kind of big militia or anything, but your former groups that, hey, you know, my brother-in-law, my cousin, my, you know, whoever, my longtime, lifetime friend that I trust, that we're going to stand together. We're going to protect each other and our families. And it's
time to get
there.
We have to include the NATO Treaty Article 5 in that. An attack on one is an attack on all.
Yeah, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done everything they could to isolate us and cut off the community part so that they have people less powerful now than they were a few years ago in that idea of standing up one for all. But then 5 or 6 years ago, nobody really had any feeling that that should be. Now a lot of people feel that way.
Yes.
You know, that we have to look out for one another. And, but, you know, I don't mean to sound like I'm all that militant, because I'm not militant, but I'm drawn demarcation lines, and I am completely defensive, all in confidence,
Attorney Binger gave you the demarcation line. He told you, Kyle Rittenhouse claims the right to self-defense. He's the one that brought the gun.
Right.
That was the demarcation line, because the other guy also had a gun, but even if the other guy didn't have a gun, you don't give up your right to self-defense because you're armed. You give up your right to self-defense if you're not.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this part with the drawing the demarcation lines is really kind of way, way, way earthy compared to that monologue that you gave, but they tie together.
They do.
Because one doesn't function without the other. If you don't have the mindset that you explained in that hour and 12-minute monologue, if you don't understand that ground of being, then you can't know when, how, and why you should defend yourself and others, the protection of the innocent.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Well, Butch, I appreciate you spending some time with me on this Thanksgiving Sunday.
Well, and, I apologize for being so tired and inarticulate.
You were definitely not inarticulate, but I hear the tired in your voice, and I'm feeling it in my bones. And I think we're all feeling it, and we need to really edify and encourage each other, because as winter comes, this is going to be much harder. And don't think that I'm prognosticating here, because I know what's already happened and what the results of what's happened are, and we're going to see them start to manifest, and nothing can change that at this point. It's
no,
going to be emotionally devastating, but it's done.
Yeah, it's done. Yeah. It's already done. You're right. And we're going to see the deadly fruit of it. Mm-hmm. And, the death toll is going to be staggering.
It's going to be frightening. And it's we really need to not only have that noetic connection with God, but we need to have that connection with each other to keep ourselves grounded and sane, as the emotional terrorism is going to reach proportions that none of us have ever experienced or even imagined.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, love you, man. And I love your audience too, all those anonymous people out there and the trolls that come on and in the force of life and death say absolutely stupid crap. You know, God help them. God help them.
Amen.
I'm going to let you go. Bye now.
Thank you, Butch. Take care. Speaking of the anonymous audience, folks, Butch's channel, that's Bond Robin on Rumble, BitChute, and GabTV, and this show, blogtalkradio.com/LibertyThunder, don't have any circulation other than you. Period. Full stop, end of story. Nobody knows the show exists. Nobody knows how to find it. You have to get it out there, and just sharing the link is helpful, but it's not enough. You have to go places where people who might be open to it are and post it in the comment sections, like at Conservative Treehouse or even InfoWars or War Room or Patriots.win. Oh, Rex, why don't you do that? When I do it, it's self-promotion as if I'm selling a product, and that tends to, when you do it, not being paid, it's going to have more of a reception. If you tell people why you listen and why they should listen, and then they can make their own conclusion. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I'm me. I'm not changing for anybody. I'm trying to tell the truth as best I can. And that is difficult these days, not necessarily to tell, although there is a little bit of that, but it is very difficult to have people understand it. But it needs to be done, and you need to share it, because the dark winter is coming, and it is going to be very, very to get through it. It's not going to be easy at all, and we need to help each other, because
I don't know, folks. We need a whole new thinking here. We need a whole new thinking. We need a whole new thinking.
Yeah, it's the war dance, because the war is waged, and the body counts are going to pick up. And that concept of anonymous, your soul has been given capacities from its creation, and you are integrated, body and soul. Hence the discussion about the right to self-defense, to protect your not only your bodily autonomy, but to protect your free will. It's not willy-nilly, but from an actual threat, is incredibly important, because those capacities and those faculties that God gave you to know truth are very important, and it is in that context of the fullness of revelation that you must live. Anything outside of that context is not another choice among many. There is one God. He is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He is the creator of everything. And apart from that reality, everything is a simulacrum, a facsimile, a fantasy, a phantom, and it will lead you astray. Nothing is more important than that. Because the purveyors of evil will keep pushing the agenda. They don't move the goalposts accidentally. It is intentional. They are not hypocrites, because they don't measure progress by a set of standards. For them, the ends justifies the means. The right, the normies, are reactive and passive. Hence, they're always fighting yesterday's battles as the battle space has advanced beyond today. This dialectic of the past versus the future is the perennial conflict. And conflict is the process by which change occurs. Yet no one asks. We merely echo slogans. Be the change you want. The change candidate in the change election. I want to change the world. The undefined, vague, amorphous change is never examined. It is grounded in nothing. And as the conflict is waged, action, reaction, the manipulation, the manipulators achieve cultural hegemony. Cultural hegemony. And control in a manner that's imperceptible to the useful idiot combatants on the right and the left. The synthesis is never this or that. It is always something else, something less, a brazen lie. And that lie becomes the new this, the new thesis, the new baseline of the perverse paradigm. Whom? Libido dominandi, a lust for power and dominance. The oligarchs dominate for their master, the evil one. Anodyne, modern, technological, MK-Ultra psychological warfare makes the diabolical meta-narrative a verboten subject. We are relegated to addressing the minor dialectics because we forget the meta-reality. The meta-level is never challenged. We are tyrannized by the minutiae of the mundane and the machinations of hollow men. Rapid-fire crises are hurled at you at the speed of electrons, overwhelming your sense and shutting all the dampers on your memory, killing your noetic faculty, and rendering you a zombie, and soon to be a cybernetic zombie chimera, assuming they don't actually kill you. You will be a walking dead man machine, and they shall be your gods. That's what they want to do. The broken human strain was infected with dialectics from the fall. But Descartes and Kant enabled Hegel and his progeny to take it to a level of scientific precision unimagined in prior ages. Marx's material historicism end goal is a clever deceit, but the process does play out almost automatically. And only the renegade human strains who dare to seek truth earnestly may be able to transcend the dialectical dance of death. That was one of the aphorisms I posted on Facebook when I was allowed to, but it's definitely on my Gab timeline. You need to follow me on Gab, @X_Christie, and he is @BonRobin, and you need to follow us on Gab. The true free speech platform, Torba, is doing an amazing job. We need to support those who are in the battle with us. Or you can go over to the ghetto of Getter, the Twitter killer, where all the regular Republicans and Miles Guo and Jason Miller are going to promote the next bullshit America First-looking Republican distract you as a global genocide is perpetrated and a one-world tyranny is implemented. The Kantian chasm between the meta-reality and the minutiae reality is very wide. It is divided by thought words that prevent this truth from being communicated to the masses. Butch and I were just talking about. The road is wide and easy that leads to perdition, and I don't know how to talk to you because you cannot hear me. Understanding is nearly impossible, and while my monologues and aphorisms are pretty simple and profound, most of you lack the context to apprehend them. There is too much forgetting and not enough effort. Butch said he was tired. I'm tired. We're all tired, because sincerely believed lies are more dangerous than those who knowingly spread lies. I'm tired. I'm so very tired. I know you're tired too. It's hard to hear it. Like, I remember when I first stumbled across the Masonic underpinnings of our country. Okay, this was 20-some years ago. I didn't want to believe it. It made me sick. I was emotionally devastated. And I wanted to run back to the comfortable paradigm that I had believed. what I wanted to do. The dissonance was devastating. The cognition was crushing. Knowing I was complicit in propagating the lies was harrowing. But I'm grateful to God for making me a slave to truth, even when I didn't acknowledge him at all. Look, truth is hard to swallow. Sugar pills go down easy. The softly spoken lies, no one has to shove those down your throat. But have you ever dispassionately examined your presuppositions and your paradigm? Seriously, dispassionately examine them. It's the best way to unfuck your mind. And I'm tired from all this stuff, but I'm also tired because maybe you heard, we had an election here in Virginia this month. God, talking about it has been just so hard. Everybody hates Rex when they discuss it with him. Everybody. Because, you know the elections are rigged, right? I mean, I assume you know that if you're listening to this show. But following the great Republican Party Virginia victory of 2021, young cuckin, are likely to result in gains. In order to blame the conservatives, Republican, MAGA, Trump voters for Biden's lack of effectiveness. I mean, it's assuming that they can keep him there. But it's a setup. It's like Virginia was a setup. I didn't participate. I told everybody that it was bullshit. I said, whatever's going to happen is going to happen with or without me. After the victory, everybody was like, see, we won. Yay. I kept on telling them, I don't expect much from a Carlyle Group lobbyist affiliated with Dominion who promotes wokeism. And now the article, I mean, shit, not 2 weeks later, the articles start coming out about young tucking. Big fucking shocker. They gave you a real firebrand as a lieutenant governor. She's fantastic. But the lieutenant governor has no power. And if you think, oh, she'll be governor next time, usually here in Virginia, it's the attorney general who becomes the governor, not the lieutenant governor. So we'll see. The Republican Party rigs elections here in the Commonwealth in the primaries. That's why Senator Chase wasn't running for governor. It was young Cuckind. And it's not going to fix anything. But people got pissed when I tell them that. Because they want to feel that they've gotten something positive done. But that's a lie. It's a fucking lie. Now, is there some positive? Yeah, I mean, I suppose we'll have less COVID regulations, restrictions here, maybe. Other than that, I don't expect much of anything. It's going to be part of a psyop. And the Democrats are doing the same thing. They're doing a psyop, too. As I know it's early, but as of right now, it's looking like the setup for 2024 is Manchin. You know? He's the moderate, sober, serious Democrat. Now, unlike the woke crazies who lost the 2022 midterms, right, because they're going to push the wokeism, they're going to lose to the GOP, you're going to think it's a huge fucking victory, doesn't mean dick, and the Democrats will then discard their woke crazies and embrace the sober guy who prevented Biden's jerk back better plan from being trillions of dollars or whatever. Who knows? They'll come up with some nonsense. Because Manchin would, you know, for all those blue-collar Trump Democrats, you can come back now. We have a real good, sober, blue-collar Democrat who's pro-Second Amendment. And then they'll throw up, you know, Pompeo or DeSantis or some other cunt. I'm not picking on DeSantis. He's fine. He's done a very good job. But I'm just, you know, let's face it. If they're promoting him, it's because he's manageable. Same with Pompeo, CIA director. They're going to be the, whatever the Republican ticket is in 2024, it'll be the MAGA-sounding America sort of first-ish in the globalist order dynamic duo who have been endorsed by Trump. Because if Trump isn't running, they'll get him to endorse whoever is. maybe they'll give them a concession or two where, you know, we'll slap China harder than this or whatever. I mean, it's kind of fucking irrelevant, right? That's the setup. And we're all going to get excited about it. And meanwhile, in the real world, there's going to be a genocide over the next 5 years is going to be off the charts. And the transhumanist reset and New World Order will march on. I mean, transhumanism, and I credit Bannon with doing this, same with Alex, it's not some kind of myth. It's not something that's far off. Like I said on the last show, Lord Birkenhead's 1929 article talked about essentially a transhumanist one-world tyranny by 2029. That's in 7 fucking years, people. And it's a very real possibility. It's not science fiction, futurist prognostications. It's fucking real. Only you can stop it. Like we were talking about those Aborigines. Nobody is coming to save you. Resist. Rebel. Revolt. Triadic truth shatters dialectical deceits. Triadic truth shatters dialectical deceits. Know it. Learn it. Live it. I want to read another one of my posts here. Oh, yeah. This is important because they're, you know, the January 6th Unselect Committee and all this kind of stuff. Well, you remember a few years back when they depersoned Alex Jones? So this is a little bit of a twist on the old Nazi passivity, right? First, they came for Alex Jones, and I said nothing because I wasn't a conspiracy theorist. Then they came for Kyle Rittenhouse, and I said nothing because I wasn't a gun owner. Then they came for James O'Keefe, and I said nothing because I wasn't an investigative journalist. Then they came for Steve Bannon, and I said nothing because I didn't have a podcast with over 1 million downloads. Then they came for me, and there was nobody to say anything because all the people left were jabbed by Big Pharma and fully masked over their face holes. Now, that's kind of funny. It's kind of cute. That's fucking true. Think about it. Is the instinct to react to progressive liberal lies with conservative liberal lies has been conditioned into you. And it takes a heroic effort to avoid the dialectical trap. But most Americans aren't even aware of the trap. You need to stop playing dialectical games. Listen to wisdom. We have to learn from those who came before us. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, we've already talked about him earlier with Butch. The permanent lie becomes the only safe form of existence in the same way as betrayal. Every wag of the tongue can be overheard by someone. Every facial expression observed by someone. Therefore, every word, if it does not have to be a direct lie, is nonetheless obliged not to contradict the general common. Let me find this other post. You are free to do whatever they permit you to do. So long as you have no desire nor intent to do something which is not permitted, you can live with the illusion of freedom. But if you dare create friction through noncompliance, the full force of tyranny will be levied against you. Slaves are free and love their slavery in the brave new world. But the free are tormented for hatred of slavery in 1984. You have to choose slavery or freedom. You're going to die anyway. But you have a soul to save. All right, I think this has gone long enough. I'm going to wrap it up, I really want you to think hard about how the dialectic works and how you react dialectically. And to get that context of how it's been played out, you need to be familiar with Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud's nephew, who created the public relations and advertising industry. You really need to get, I mean, go look at Butch's stuff. He's done hours and hours on this stuff, but you really need to imbibe on this stuff. You need to get familiar with Anthony Sutton. And if you really want to find out how they made your kids stupid, it had nothing to do with critical race theory last year. Read Charlotte Iserby's book, The Dumb Intentional Dumbing Down of America. She's got several videos that you can see also. So does Anthony Sutton. Larry McDonald is another one. His stuff is still there. They don't censor most of that stuff because nobody looks for it. You see, you don't even know what to look for because you're programmed into Hegelian reaction. The real action is in the reaction, right? Conflict is the process. Conflict creates progress towards the new world order, the manifestation of the diabolic in this plane of existence. The only combat there is to that is the truth. The truth is not a concept. Speaking to you like I do this, because I do evil every day. Yeah, I do it, and often I do it willfully. That's what sin is. I'm not permanently, constantly, and consistently unencumbering my noetic capacity so that I can live and walk with God. A lot of you think you are, but really most of you suffer from prelist. I've had issues with prelist and Nikita, but for the most part, you know, I try sincerely and got the baggage of living like a practical atheist most of my life. It's a struggle. Struggle is real. It's tiring, but you have to struggle because all you've got is the struggle. You have to struggle to overcome yourself for the glory of God. And then you've got to be smart. Sin is of wise as a serpent. You've got to be smart. So you have to have this background knowledge. You have to have the wisdom to act appropriately in truth. The truth is not a concept. The truth is personal. The truth is a person. In the beginning, God spoke one word, one logos. Jesus. Everything was made through Jesus. Being is manifest in Jesus. The eternal second person of the Blessed Trinity. And as we're approaching Christmas, like I said, as we're approaching Christmas, we're celebrating the incarnation that happened 9 months ago, the birth of the God who became man, the truth who became man, uniting in one person his human nature with his divinity, opening the path, the way to eternal life. These are facts of revelation. These are facts of revelation to every human being ever born, ever will be born, everywhere. It's a Christian revelation for everybody because Christ made the world. Better learn these facts quick. As you enter into his body through baptism and you struggle and battle to stay there. And it's going to be hard. Every day is going to be hard, but especially here and now, because what's coming at us is going to be frightening. And it's very easy to check out and be distracted by the bread circuses, except for those few anecdotal personal issues where someone dies and they explain it away as something other than genocide. But it's going to get more difficult. But the opportunity that God is presenting us with is an opportunity for clarity. Like no time in recent history, we have an opportunity for clarity, for moral clarity, mental clarity, physical clarity, metaphysical clarity. The contrast is going to be severe. It is going to happen fast. And if you are not careful, you will be blindsided and you will miss it. But clarity there will be. If you're going to die anyway, you might as well die standing on your feet for the glory of Christ. Live forever. Otherwise, you might be trapped in a technocratic cyborg zombie chimera body for a long time. That, my friends, is literally hell on earth. Don't let the tranquility fool you away from seeing the discordance. The world is discordant. That's not a bug. It's a feature of the world after the fall. And the discordance is how we can see truth through the eyes blinded by sin. It wasn't supposed to be this way, but it was inevitable that it would be. You can't fault Adam, put yourself in his position. You would have probably done worse. I know I would. The simple fact is that the world has fallen, but the world has been recapitulated and redeemed. And only by entering into that relationship, Christ himself, can you partake in the truth. That's the struggle. That's the only struggle. Everything else we're doing is a manifestation of that singular struggle. Overcome yourself for love of God and live forever, ever, or be overcome by the lie and die forever. Those are your ultimate choices, and we're coming to a period of clarity. How is it going to play out? Don't know. That makes you uncomfortable, the not knowing. Well, you see, the problem with having a known is like, you know, I've read the last page of the book or I've seen the end of the movie, now I'm just watching it again because it's fun. No, no, no. It's unwritten. It's unknown. And don't give me none of this, you know, I'm a Christian. I read the final chapter. We win. God wins. God wins. The we is contingent upon you and your struggle. I pray that you make it. I pray that I make it. We have to pray for each other. We have to help each other through this darkness because the clarity will be amazing and it'll probably blind a lot of otherwise good people into going the wrong way. You need to be the loud voice of truth in this moment of clarity so that more and more people can come out on the other side in a better way, in a better life. In truth. That's what we're fighting for. So the discordance is real. The struggle is real. The tranquility is the peace of the lie. Don't fall for it. Fight every day against your own inclinations. Fight for truth. Fight for Christ. Maybe we'll make America great again, but it would be an ancillary reward. Because what we really need to do is save souls, most especially your own, because that's really the only one that you have direct control over. But will you be a light for the others in clarity, or will you drag them down into the lie? Those are the choices. That's the struggle every day. That's what we have to do. If you think dialectically, if you allow the psychological warfare that you've already suffered to keep twisting you into these perverse reactions that further the lie, you're not helping, you're hindering. You need to break the dialectics and only triadic thinking and break the dialectics. That's your mission. That's what you should pray for as we approach Christmas. That's what you need to be thankful for, that you have the opportunity to do it. And maybe we can make America great again. But hopefully we'll make the city of God full again. This is Rex, wishing you a happy Thanksgiving. Signing off. The thunder of liberty rumbles on.
Look at what other countries are doing to us. China, everyone. They're killing us on trade. If I'm elected president, we will win, and we will win, and we will win. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Trump, thank you.